to Dynamic Health. And yes, my name is Carl Loskin, and we're sitting in with for Croft Woodruff. And for his program, he'll be off for 2-3 weeks. So we're sitting in now. And we have a great program for you today. Today we have Dr. Ruth Heydrich. She's a PhD. And we're going to be covering most of our program today. It's going to be covering many of the issues that she feels very strongly about. So Ruth Heydrich has... she's an author, she's a triathlete, but I'd like to best describe, she would be best to describe exactly all the many things she does. She's a breast cancer survivor, she has over 900 trophies for being a triathlete. She's 71 years old, she sounds like 50, and she's still running. And she has many books. Maybe you can just tell us about the books that you've authored.
I would love to, Dave. Carl, thanks for having me. The first book was A Race for Life, which is exactly what I was in for with the breast cancer when I was 47 years old. They had followed it for 3 years, and in the meantime, of course, it was continuing to grow. And by the time they got to it, it had spread, and that's where my life was really in jeopardy. And this is part of what we're going to be talking about tonight is nutrition. And the outcome of that was A Race for Life, how I went from cancer to the Ironman triathlon. And I don't know how many of the listeners know what the Ironman is, but briefly, it's a 2.4-mile swim, followed by a 112-mile bike race. You jump off the bike and tear into the beginning of a marathon, 26.2 miles marathon. My first one took me 14 hours and 47 minutes of racing at top speed because I was going for first place. So anyway, that's the book, A Race for Life, was how I trained for that, how I did it, and turned around and said, just wait till next year. So I've been racing ever since. And that was 24 years ago that I changed my diet, that I beat the breast cancer, and have been going pretty strong ever since. Then a lot of people were asking me, well, how do you eat? What do you eat? How much of this? How much of that? And is this okay? So I made up a cookbook, and I call it CHEF. CHEF is an acronym that means... Chef.
CHEF.
Yeah. Well, I forgot what the C is.
Coalition.
Isn't that funny?
Carrots.
No. It's something about healthy, easy, and fast. Darn, when I think about it.
You've written anyway. So many books, you're forgiven for not remembering one there, you know?
That is so funny. Anyway, it's a cook/raw book because... About 7 years ago, I went raw, so I'm now a raw vegan, and I have recipes in that book. It's an e-book, actually, and that's why I don't ever see the cover, because it is something you download from the computer. And then my third book was the one that just came out called Senior Fitness, the Diet and Exercise Program for Maximum Health and Longevity. As Carl said, I'm 71. And I don't intend to ever quit. I'm going to be racing at 100. And I have both genes and lifestyle on my side. I was just thinking earlier that I still have all my aunts and uncles at 71. My mom is 90, and all my grandparents live to 90. So I'm doing okay genetically. And most of us actually do have the genes for a lifespan of 120. What we do is mess it up with our lifestyle habits, and we do the wrong diet and not enough exercise. So in a nutshell, those are my three books so far. Oh, I'm working on a fourth one. It's called Running Round the World. And this is part of what I have as a goal now. After having done 1,000 races, my interests have kind of changed to traveling and going to different countries and running in unique places. Like I have already run on the Great Wall of China. I've done the Moscow Marathon in Russia. In fact, 5 different cities in Russia that I've run in. And let's see, I've run in front of Stonehenge in England, the Royal Mile in Edinburgh, all across Canada from one province to the other. Last summer I was running in Newfoundland, landed in Halifax and took the ferry to Port-au-Basque and ran all around that area. Just incredible.
So you're having fun.
Yeah.
But in fact, I would suggest to you that when you were diagnosed with breast cancer, you took the difficult path, which was physical fitness and nutrition. Yeah. We wanted to zero in on that because maybe the alternative, which is probably which most people would choose, is radiation and chemotherapy.
Right, which is what the doctors decided against.
Yeah. Tell us about that decision.
That decision came about fortuitously, the most amazing luck. Right after I had the surgery, which you have to have in order to accurately diagnose it. You have to get some tissue, put it under the microscope. A pathologist has to look at it and say yes or no, it is or is not cancer. In my case, it was infiltrating ductal carcinoma, which is a type of breast cancer that spreads moderately fast. And as I said earlier, in my case, it had spread. In fact, I had hot spots in my bones and a lesion in my lung. So the prognosis was very grim, and they said, we've got to start chemo and radiation right away. At the same time, I had just gotten home from the hospital, and I happened to see an ad in the newspaper, a little two-line ad, said, wanted women with breast cancer to participate in diet research study. This was amazing, because I had just been diagnosed, and I thought, diet? That... Not in my case, because I really thought that I had a good diet. I didn't eat red meat. I had low-fat dairy, skim milk. In fact, so skim it was powdered milk, and only chicken and fish. And I thought, I'm going to contribute to the research. I'm going to show that it may or may not be diet, but in my case, I knew that that wasn't a factor. But I was willing to talk to Dr. John McDougall, and some of your listeners may know who Dr. John McDougall is. He's written a whole bunch of books and has become quite famous, more in the U.S., about the role of diet, nutrition in disease. After talking to Dr. McDougall for 2 hours, I walked out of his office a vegan. Vegan, meaning no animal products whatsoever, and more than that, a low-fat vegan, which means no oils.
Let me just zero in on this. Why no animal fat no animal products when you've been diagnosed with cancer?
Well, what we know now, that affects all diseases. But in the case of cancer, that was the one that Dr. McDougall saw, that when he looked at the incidence of cancer in countries all over the planet, from all continents, whether it's Asia, Africa, Europe, our own continent, what he saw was that the cultures that consumed the most animal products had the highest rates of cancer of all kinds, not just breast cancer, but colon cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer. You know, the Japanese smoke a lot, and they have low incidence of lung cancer. Now, why is that? Because their diet is low in animal products.
But what is it in animal products that is, as you say, encouraging the all types of cancers? So what is it?
Well, we think it's partly the hormones in animal products. Whether or not, I mean, you can say, well, I only eat organic beef or organic dairy or whatever, but these animals have their own hormones. And some of us think that that's enough of the hormone to, in addition to our own that we make, to promote cancer. And in fact, there you have to know about cancer being having to have an initiator and a promoter. And anything can be an initiator. Just radiation from the sun can initiate a cancer cell. And your diet it affects your immune system. The job of the immune system is to detect and destroy cancer cells. So if you're eating a high animal or a high fat diet, you're handicapping your immune system. The natural killer cells are the cells in your body, the white blood cells, whose job it is to search through the body, head to toe, every part in between, and look for these cancer cells that have been initiated by whatever and they can happen spontaneously, just an odd mutation.
And now, you're going so fast, and I have so many questions. Now, let's talk about hormones.
Okay.
Now, we know that eggs, that when the baby chick is born, there's this rich food, and it's a growth accelerator. We know that the chickens that most people eat, it's from egg to fully grown broiler in 6 weeks.
Yep.
That means cells are multiplying, dividing
rapidly
at an incredible rate. We're consuming that. The same is with pigs and beef. Is that correct?
And cows. Yep, cow's milk. The main reason it's so bad for us is that these are the mammary secretions made to take a baby calf at 60 or 80 pounds and in 6 months have it for 600 pounds so that it can go to market. Well, that's what they raise it
for. Now, if you're saying that milk makes a baby calf grow into presumably a 400-pound cow in 6 months, probably with some grass and stuff, but the milk is what is the...
Accelerates the
is
growth.
The promoter, as you said, indicator. You need the indicator and the promoter. Now, when people are consuming dairy products, are you saying that there is a link between consumption of all dairy products, including yogurt, cheese, cottage cheese,
yes,
all these products that are being promoted so widely, that there is a link between those dairy products and cancer? Are you saying that?
Absolutely. The data is there. All you have to do is, you can go on the internet and do your own research, but in my books, and especially Senior Fitness, which was very thoroughly documented. In fact, my editor wouldn't let me say anything without documenting it. And I have whole sections on dairy and animal foods of all kinds and why. The proof is that if you have a lot of dairy products consumed, then you have a high risk of not only cancer, but heart disease, diabetes, osteoporosis, arthritis, high blood pressure, obesity. It's just amazing. All these diseases that are promoted by our standard Canadian diet.
Ruth, to change the subject, Doctor, we're speaking with Ruth Heidrich, author, and she has a wonderful webpage, triathlete, senior, author of
Senior Fitness.
Senior Fitness. Yeah. Now, I've got a copy that was sent to me with the Globe and Mail here, and it's called Wellness Options.
Oh.
A glossy inclusion with the Globe and Mail.
Uh-huh.
And it's talking about food and nutrition and updates. And it talks about the good fat in bacon.
Oh, no.
So now, there you see the picture, two eggs and bacon. And this is presumably the supplement that's being put out, a glossy magazine.
Yeah.
You're just talking about this is that people have a problem there's a problem with these foods that encourage growth, cells to grow, hormones, and the link with cancer that you've just mentioned, and milk is implicated. What is your reaction to seeing this article here?
I'm shocked and I'm outraged. I think we ought to launch a lawsuit against the sponsors of this. This is promoting sickness, disease. Think of the poor cows and the pigs that they're just mistreating, the inhumane treatment of these animals. And to have somebody say that this is good for us, if we can get into environmental issues, we've got mountains of manure from all these animals. Oh, it just goes on and on. I think that's an outrage, and it just makes me so upset. Every time we look at the medical bills and people in doctors' offices, do you know that we cause most of our own diseases? We cause them by eating animal foods, by eating foods laced with chemicals and hormones. These are what are causing the numbers 1 in 2 killers of all Canadians, heart disease and cancer. We cause them ourselves, and we don't get enough exercise, so we get obese, and when we have all this fat in our bodies, that hampers our immune system, which, again, leads to a higher incidence of the heart disease and cancer, diabetes, arthritis. How many people do you know are on drugs? In fact, in my book, Senior Fitness, I talk about the top 10 killers of Canadians and how there's a dietary component and how we're causing these diseases ourselves and how there's an exercise component in these top 10 diseases. How of the top 10 drugs that most Canadians take, that you can reverse these symptoms, stop treating the symptoms instead of the disease, as most modern medicine does. You go to the doctor with a headache or constipation, and you get a pill. If you have arthritis, you get a pill. You're never told to stop eating animal products, that it's the animal protein that is causing the inflammation in your joints. Has anybody ever told you that? Have you ever heard that?
You know,
that?
Ruth, when I, 26 years ago, when I turned 40, I had arthritis.
Me too.
So bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I thought it was because I was always on my little boat and my right hand. And I always thought that it was being caused because my hand often used to get white with the cold and everything. But when I gave up this consumption, when I became a vegetarian, first of all, I was a vegetarian. Uh-huh. You know, miraculously, well, look at me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I have right. No pains in any joints.
And no pills,
how,
right?
How,
no pills.
Well, you know, I do have a gift for you from my garden. It's some of the green shoots from my broccoli and kale plants.
Good.
And we'll munch on them when we have a little break in about 5 minutes' time. And is that sufficient just to not have any? People are afraid that we're not consuming, we're not giving enough nutrients to our bodies.
Specifically protein and calcium. Those are the two that people ask me about all the time. Well, where do you get your protein if you're not eating any animal products? Where do you get your calcium if you're not consuming any dairy? And the answer is the best source in the world are the plant products. They have all the protein we need. Look at all the primates that are strictly vegetarian that get their muscles. You know, the chimpanzees and the big gorillas and orangutans all have big muscles from leafy greens. And that's where I get my muscles, too, and working out.
And you're strong like an elephant. And what does the elephant eat?
What do they eat? Hay? Grass? It's got to be.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, they have their long trunks and they twist their trunks around a patch of grass and rip it off and down
grass
the hatch.
And greens from trees, too?
Yeah, yeah. Well, giraffes, they have got long necks.
They eat at the
look,
top of
look
trees.
Look how big. You know, apparently giraffes have the strongest hearts of all because they could pump that blood all up to that little brain on top there that says to eat the nice little green shoots on top of the trees.
That's right.
But so people feel inadequate. The first time I had a plate with only vegetables, I thought there was something missing. But 25 years later, I have no ailments.
Good.
And I know many other people who've taken the difficult path, because the easy path is, as you said before, to take the drugs and believe you're going to be getting a cure.
Yeah.
And you're saying that's not the way.
Yeah, I'm saying you have to stop causing the disease.
Now, what they fear is that they don't have enough protein.
Right.
Now, mother's milk is some 3 to 5% protein.
Right.
And surely, if during the first 12 to 18 months, infant is doubling and trebling its weight,
right,
and it's drinking mostly mother's milk, the perfect food for the human infant, surely, and milk is only 3 to 5% protein, surely that should give us an indication of how much protein we need.
Yep.
But they say, if you do lots of exercise, you need more protein. What do you say?
I say, if you're doing lots of exercise, you're eating more because your appetite is higher, and you're burning up more calories, so you're consuming more food, which automatically gives you more protein. In fact, I wrote an article, it's on my website, on do athletes really need more protein? And I go through the math, and I show if you're only, say, consuming 2,000 calories a day, with 4 to 5% calories from protein, which you get from rice. You know, rice has that much protein.
8%.
Is it that high?
8%
protein.
Well, you
can get down to 4 to 5% if you really work
at
it. Otherwise, if you're eating the typical array of fruits and vegetables, you're getting at least 10%, maybe even 12% protein, which is twice as much as the growing baby needs. So we don't need to worry about getting enough protein. Let me tell people about my website. In fact, if you're in front of a computer right now, go to www.ruthheidrich.com.
How do you spell Heidrich?
Well, it's the whole website is R-U-T-H-H-E-I-D-R-I-C-H. H-E-I-D-R-I-C-H. And
Heidrich.com.
What comes up are 9 little boxes. And one of them is an Ask Dr. Ruth. And if you click on that, you can ask me a question, anything you want. And in fact, a lot of people think that I'm the other Dr. Ruth. You know who I mean?
But you know what? We're going to go into that a little bit because that's another of the ailments which before many
ED,
people.
Erectile dysfunction is a diet-related disease. I'm glad you brought that up.
and women also start ignoring the sexual.
That's right. Because everything gets clogged up. The
enjoyment slips by.
It clogs the heart. It clogs everything else below the belt as well, and you want to keep that area.
But 70-year-old men aren't supposed to be fathers at that age, are they? Except, of course, Pierre Trudeau did it.
Well, do you know that in South America, in Ecuador, in the mountains, the Andes, there's a tribe, the Vilcabamba, and they sire children at over 100 years of age.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I'm encouraged.
Yes.
You know...
No, we don't want any more kids. We're already overpopulated.
But
trying is what's fun.
We're talking to Dr. Ruth Heidrich, and John Pranger is in the control room. Thank you, John, for being with us today. And we're going to ask John, maybe afterwards, maybe if he has a question or two to Ruth, but we're going to have just a little touch of music, and then we'll be back with the other... to Ruth.
Well, they come into the forest with machines with giant teeth to save a nickel on every whopper they make with cheap imported beef. So won't you
lay down your whopper, baby? Lay down your whopper. To save the rainforest, baby. To save the rainforest, guys. From the coast of Costa Rica, Amazon and Brazil, they maximize their profits with every culture that they kill. So won't you lay down your Big Mac, baby? Lay down your Big Mac.
Eat those fries.
To save the rainforest, baby. Hey. Before the rainforest dies. 5 billion people, you got 4 billion cows. So move on down the food chain, eat those grains and tofu now. Well, won't you lay down your burger, baby? Lay down your burger.
Eat the pie.
To save the whole planet, baby.
I said to save the whole planet, mama. I said to save the whole planet, baby. Before the whole planet dies.
Yes, and you've been listening to Dana Lyons, and he'll be in Vancouver for the Vancouver Film Festival, which is going to be held at the Animal Voices Film Festival. the 3rd and 4th of June, you'll be hearing quite a bit about that announcement. Wonderful 2 days of films, documentaries, and it's something that will change the way you look at life, and it'll certainly be a different level of wonderful documentaries about animals. We have in the studio today Dr. Ruth Heydrich, PhD, and she's in the last half now mentioned many somewhat issues which you might have a few questions. She talked about breast cancer, nutrition. She talked about physical fitness. She talked about hormones in the animal products we're eating and how she is a vegan, not consuming any animal products. For 25 years, she has been cancer-free. She had, when she was diagnosed, she had a double mastectomy. And she has been fit, and she lives for 6 months in Hawaii, and for 6 months she lives in Vancouver. She has the best of both, and she has a bright and cheerful attitude. And her webpage, which is Dr. Ruth Heydrich.
www.ruthheydrich.com.
Okay, www.ruthheydrich.com. HEIDRICH.com. Well, we're going to invite people to give us a call if you have any questions for Ruth Heydrich. The phone number to call in is 604-684-7561. Now, Ruth, mental attitude, do you want to cover that a little bit? Because you've taken the difficult path in dealing with your cancer. So how about... just tell us something about the mental attitude and the stresses one goes through when being diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I'd love to. It goes back to when I was an undergraduate. I got my undergraduate work at UCLA in psychology. That's how interested I was in mental attitudes and learning and how it affected behavior. And I was, at that time, thinking about clinical psychology and helping people who had quote-unquote bad attitudes. And what I found out was that the reason most people have negative attitudes is they don't feel good. When you feel tired and aches and pains, it is almost impossible to have a positive mental attitude. What I discovered, when you change your diet, when you go to a diet of fruits and vegetables and raw, if possible, you feel so good that it's impossible to have a negative attitude. That's what I discovered, so I changed my major.
You know, Ruth, you'll have to put on the microphone, these earphones, otherwise you won't be able to hear the caller, because we do have a caller, and let's just make sure we get it. Well, we have a caller on line one, and no, it's not. So let's just go on about the issue of obesity.
Uh-huh.
You know, what we have in the United States now, the latest figures show that 1 in 3 people in the United States are obese. And I sometimes was had this whole idea, the wording of it, and this when I go to the United States, this word creeps up. As I enter the border at Blaine, I have these two words in my mind, morosely obese, because in Canada we don't see so many morosely obese people, but in the United States, as we said, 1 in 3 people are obese.
I thought it was
classified.
Two and three,
and the UK, it's 1 in 5. So mm-hmm. What are the implications here?
Well, the implications are very clear that these are very sick people, and if they're kids, they're going to get diabetes at a much earlier age, high blood pressure. So many things are going to go wrong. I don't know if these are going to work.
Okay.
They're dead.
No, anyway, so we're going to try line two, and we're not quite sure where the earphones are working. Yes, caller, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, yes. Fire away.
Okay, I have 3 quick questions. First of all, I was wondering, when you change your diet, I mean, there's a lot of talk about cleanses and stuff. Is it good to do some kind of cleansing before you, or when you change your diet? And then the other thing is there anything to do for male pattern baldness or hair loss? And then the third question is getting implants. Like for a tooth that's gone, I got a titanium screw and an implant. And I just wondered, does that affect health?
Yeah. Okay, your first question, refresh my memory, it was cleansing.
Hair.
Cleansing. When you stop putting the toxic foods in your body, your intestinal tract will cleanse itself. I didn't do any cleansing per se. I just quit putting the animal foods and the oils in my diet, and all of a sudden it seemed like I was cleansed. Now, that may not be true for everybody, but in my case, it just all of a sudden, in fact, the next morning, my chronic constipation was gone, and I haven't had any trouble with cleansing ever since. Now, the male pattern baldness is due to hormones and heredity. And I'm not sure that you want to stop your male hormones just to get more hair, because the two kind of go together. It would help if you had a good diet, because that would keep your hormones at a normal level, not too much of the wrong kinds, which are the different types of testosterone. But you want all your testosterone. So I'm not sure you can do too much about that. Now, the implants, the titanium is inert, and I think if you needed an implant, it means you've lost a tooth, right? And what we've got to chew. We have to keep our jaw bones strong. Our teeth rely on exercise. Believe it or not, teeth and gums need exercise just as the rest of your body does. So I would say get the implant so that you can continue to chew your raw fruits and vegetables, and that would keep you healthy.
What is also a problem is that many people have root canals, and they could become infected and send off poisons to the system, and that these titanium could be more neutral. And they certainly keep the jawbones strength, because, you know, there's movement there.
Yeah, you've seen old people whose mouths seem to turn in on themselves, and they can hardly talk and they can't chew. They have to go on a liquid diet, and we certainly don't want that, and we know that it's preventable. Okay.
Now maybe you can just tell us about go a little bit more into senior fitness.
Uh-huh.
As we're all aging, and the baby boomers are all sitting there by the microphones, you know.
This book is for people 50 and over, and actually 40 and over, because that's when the symptoms of aging start setting in, and people start seeing flabby muscles, and their abdomen start pooching out, and they start making excuses to not go out for a run. In fact, speaking of running, that's one of my favorite subjects, and I think the major myth about exercise is that running is bad for you. I've had doctors tell me that running is not good for me, and here I've been running for 37 years. My bone density is way up there, so I've prevented osteoporosis. The joint cartilage in my knees is as thick as it was when I was in my teen years, and we know that running does not wear out the cartilage in joints. What we do know is that if you use it, you won't lose it. And in fact, that's the only way to get any nutrition to your cartilage. If you look at cartilage, it has a very limited blood supply. In fact, if you cut through cartilage, you won't see any bleeding. But if you look at it under a microscope, you'll see, for example, in the knee cartilage on the outer edge, you'll see a few capillaries. And if you're running, when you're airborne, the loss of gravity kind of opens up the cartilage, and when you land, you get a percussion effect, or you're pounding, and it squeezes the cartilage. And it's like a set of bellows where you're opening and closing those microscopic capillaries, and that's how they get a good blood supply, and that's what keeps them strong and healthy. And if you're sedentary, and just walking is not good enough. I was privy to some research that was being done by the chairman of the osteoporosis department in a research company. And what he found was that walking was not enough to keep bones strong. It maintained, actually, but it did not reverse osteoporosis. You need the pounding the very thing that most people think is bad for you with running, the impact is actually good for you. I have a long section in my book, Senior Fitness, about the pros and cons and why I think running is the ideal exercise for both men and women for the rest of their lives.
Now, Ruth, you've been a guest for Earth Save Canada, and they're having their potluck this Sunday. Anybody's interested, earthsave.bc.ca. They're having a potluck there. And anyway, you've been on with Earth Save. You've spoken at the Taste of Health. You were one of the speakers there, and there were 300 people there when they had their Taste of Health about 7 years ago. And you've been on Animal Voices a number of times, another program on Co-op Radio. And I've listened and I've taken your advice. And you know, one day I was in the forest and I slipped on a piece of wood. It was wet and had moss on it. And my twisted my knee. And you told me exactly what you told the people now. You said to me, it's so painful. And you said to me, keep walking. Don't overdo it.
Yeah.
But, and just keep on going for exactly the reason that you so beautifully explained here a few minutes ago.
Phew.
So
out.
I don't like
to give medical advice.
A Dr. Ruth.
Yeah, I'm not a medical doctor.
You're not a medical advisor. No, we won't. I don't think anybody will take a lawsuit against you, but I am testimony of the correctness of what you said. And that certainly rest is a part of it, and certainly to overdo it is also a part
right.
of the healing process, but certainly yeah. just to be inert is totally not the correct thing to
yeah.
do.
You start dying the day you stop moving. You have to put your joints through their entire range of motion. This goes for your shoulders and your hips. You know the number of hip replacements and knee replacements that are being done in this country? Totally unnecessary. If people ate right, and right means raw fruits and vegetables to the greatest extent possible, and if they exercised, kept their bones strong, their cartilage strong, kept away the arthritis by having no animal proteins getting caught in their joint tissues, they can stay healthy and strong for at least 100 years, and I say actually 120 years. People who say, well, my grandmother smoked and drank and ate all kinds of bad food, and she lived to 90. And I say, oh, I'm so sorry she died so young.
So that raises the other issue of the genetic factor. Now, you said earlier in the first part of the program, you said, well, all your uncles and aunts are still alive.
Yep.
Now, not all my uncles and aunts are alive. So what does that mean to me? Because what you said earlier was to get these diseases is how much is this genetic and how much is it that we have the right conditions for this disease to express itself?
Yeah.
In other words, you talked about an initiator and a promoter
of cancer.
So yeah. So maybe just enlarge on that, this whole genetic factor, because people think, when I get a disease, now breast cancer, how much genetic factor is this? This is proven, isn't it?
In 5%.
Just repeat it.
Yeah.
The genetic factor of breast cancer is a proven 5 to 7%. But the rest, like 95%, is what?
Is lifestyle.
It's lifestyle.
It's diet and lack of exercise.
So why are we always talking about the genetic factor?
Yeah, because that's what people think. They don't realize how much power they have in their lives, that they are causing their own diseases. I want to harp on that we cause our own diseases. And doctors aren't telling patients that. You don't read it in the newspapers. That insert that you showed me earlier was undoubtedly sponsored by one of the meat and dairy industry companies. There is so much advertising going on. Drug companies, that's another one we could talk about. There are, 8 drug salesmen per doctor? And their job is to visit doctors' offices and get them to use their company's drugs. And that's what gets a lot of people in trouble. That's supposedly, I think it's now the fourth leading cause of death is wrong drug interactions.
Not only that, it's drugs which have been properly prescribed.
Right.
And Croft Woodruff always talks about that, you know, the drugs. By the way, this is Dynamic Health. We're sitting, my name is Carl Loskin. We're sitting in for Croft Woodruff, who is quite busy at this time of the year. And my guest today is Ruth Heydrich, a senior fitness expert. She is a breast cancer survivor. She's a triathlete. And she's proven from her own experience that what she does has led to her not being a victim of the health system, but a victor.
I did my first Ironman triathlon less than 2 years after my diagnosis of breast cancer, when I was 47 years old and thinking that once I reached 50, that life was essentially over with. That 50-year-old women are just, you know, postmenopausal, head for the rocking chair, and life's essentially over. Whereas I found just the opposite with this new diet. At the age of 50, I was traveling. I did the Ironman in New Zealand, did the Ironman in Japan, ran the Great Wall of China. The 50s were fantastic years for me, and that was because of my good diet and my good exercise as a runner. I've been a runner now for 37 years, and that's why I know that it's an excellent exercise. It's not just me. I do have friends who run. I belong to a track club. And there are lots of women in their 50s, 60s, and 70s who run. And you ought to see their legs, beautiful legs, no varicose veins, no cellulite, really in tip-top shape. So it's the best exercise, head to toe, inside and out, for your heart, your lungs, your bones, as well as your skin, and just to make you happy. We're talking about our positive mental attitude earlier. There's nothing like exercise to reverse a down feeling. That after an exercise bout, I come out of the pool or the ocean or out of the gym or after a run, pat myself on the back and say, good girl, Ruthie, you did it again. This morning, by the way, I had to cut my exercise session a little short to make it here.
And,
I'm normally doing between 2 and 3 hours of exercise every morning. And to get into town from White Rock, I had to cut it short. And believe it or not, I kind of resent that. I love my exercise so much that I don't like anything interfering with it.
Now, we started the program about 2 minutes late because of this confession here. Well, we are inviting calls. We do have a caller here. If you have any questions for Ruth Heydrich, the number to call is 604-684-7561, and maybe she'll answer your questions. Well, over to line one, and over to Ruth. Caller, you're on.
Hi. Is that me?
Yeah.
Yes, you're on.
Hello?
Yes.
Well, yeah, okay. I had this question. I had this book that I read long ago, or actually just a couple years ago, and it was called How to Eat to Live. And in the book, the author, he says that the proper way to eat is to eat one meal a day or less. And if you were to I won't even get into the rest of it. There's many questions in there many things in there that just threw me for a loop. But he believes that you should eat only one meal a day. I just like your thoughts on that. If you could.
Well, I don't eat just one meal a day. I have my first meal after my workout when my blood sugar is very low because I've exercised and burned up all those calories, and they need to be replenished. And it takes about an hour and a half to use up all the blood sugar in your muscles, and that needs to be replenished. Now, if I didn't eat for the rest of the day, I would not have the glycogen on board for exercise the next day. So I think you really need at least 2 meals a day. That you'll find all kinds of prescriptions and books that, advertise everything, different attempts to try to find the secret to perfect health. And I don't think that's one of them. In fact, in my first book, A Race for Life, I talk about grazing and having frequent small meals, and that that's the best way to keep your energy up. So, no, I don't go along with 1 meal a day.
Now, imagine for a moment that I'm a couch potato, and I like to watch TV, and I decide to go for a little walk. But what would you say to me now? Because I've listened to you today, and I like what you say. You're a living example of what's been good for you. And I weigh 200 pounds, and I'm 4'6". What what would you say to me? I'm going to change my lifestyle now. But let's get going here.
Okay, you probably should start out walking because your joints are not going to be able to take your and your bones and your muscles if you do too much too soon. And that's a risk that a lot of people have when they get all motivated and excited and they're ready to change their lifestyle. You can do too much too soon. The first run I ever did was a mile. After I read Kenneth Cooper's book, Aerobics, in 1968, I got so excited about running, I ran a mile. That wasn't too much for me because I felt so fantastic the next morning. I ran another mile and another mile. And I did this for about 5 years until I got to the point where I was not ready to turn around at the end of that mile. So I extended it to 2 miles and then 3 and then 6. And the next thing I knew, gradually I was doing marathons and even ultra marathons. I've done a 50-mile race. I've done a 37-mile race up to the top of Haleakala on Maui, and that's from zero to 10,000 sea level to 10,000 feet in 7.5 hours. So I did this over a period of years. At that time that I did that, I'd been running 14 years. So start out gradually, but consistently. I do exercise every day. I know some people say you should have a day of rest. Well, I alternate different exercises. When I do a hard run one day, I'll do a hard bike the next day. Swimming is not going to really tear your body up like running does, so you can swim every day. In fact, competitive swimmers swim twice a day. They have workouts at 6 in the morning and again at 6 in the afternoon or 4, whenever. Your body can take a lot if you gradually improve it. And for you, as a couch potato weighing 200 pounds, you obviously need to change your diet. That reminds me, I work out at the White Rock, Surrey gym, and I see a lot of people there, older men, in their 50 and above, lifting a lot of weight, a lot more weight than I can lift, and yet they have these big bellies in front of them, and they're like watermelons. And I've been watching them for a number of years. I've been going to the White Rock Gym for about 6 years now, and these bellies have not changed. They're lifting all this weight. What's the secret? They need to change their diet. They need to quit eating these foods that are promoting the fat. These are the hormones that we were talking about earlier that cause animals, and we are animals, to put on fat. And that's why you feed these foods to hogs so that they weigh more, so the farmer gets more, to cows so that you get more beef out of the cow. Well, we're doing that to ourselves when we're eating the animal products with the hormones. And you need to stop eating that way. As I mentioned before, I'm a raw vegan, which means that I don't cook. I have a stove that has never been used. Never. The burners or the oven, not ever been used. It's partly laziness, I have to admit. Who wants to cook when you don't have to? You can cut up fruits and vegetables, and that book that the caller was referring to, some books say you can't mix fruits and vegetables. Well, I never heard that until fairly recently, so I've been mixing fruits and vegetables merrily for many, many years and find that that's not a problem. So I mix merrily.
Right. Now you're not skinny and you're doing lots of exercise and you're basically eating most 90%, 95, 99% raw food.
15% body fat is my body fat percentage.
Now what is the secret of raw foods that haven't been destroyed by heat? What's the magic there? Is it complete and adequate?
Well, I think it's more that they're perfect the way they're grown. The problem is when you cook them that you're denaturing the protein, you're destroying the enzymes, you're changing the form of the food. It's just an unnatural thing to do to food. It wastes energy. I think we wouldn't have the energy crisis we do now if we all quit cooking our food, if we just ate fruits and vegetables.
Right. You know, we have John Pranger in the studio. He's come from the control room, and if he just comes over to your mic, he has a question.
Yeah, because you can't hear me from there. But I'd like to know, like, people will say, don't blame the victim. You shouldn't blame yourself for the diseases that you get. The Cancer Society will tell you that. All these things are wrong and mean-spirited to blame the victim. But you're saying exactly the opposite. Can you explain that?
Wow. Yeah, John, you're right. It's not a case of blame. It's a case of ignorance and nobody telling these people that, in my case, it was Dr. McDougall who said, yeah, you were causing your disease, but here's how to stop causing it and to reverse it. Or we're causing our obesity, and here's how to stop causing the obesity or the high blood pressure. If you change your diet and start exercising every day, your blood pressure will go down and you can get off drugs. And I'm not saying this that everybody should do this without consulting with their doctors, but just do it anyway, because most doctors will tell you that that's not going to work. I know from firsthand experience, doctors will say, with lowering cholesterol, oh, we tried diet and exercise. They usually tried switching from red meat to chicken and fish, and the cholesterol didn't go down. They said, oh, we tried that and didn't work. Or the exercise, oh, I take a 20-minute walk 3 times a week. Well, no wonder it didn't work. I run an hour every day, and that may be what it takes to see really spectacular results. My blood pressure runs 90 over 60, which is even lower than the average 120 over 80. So in terms of blaming the victim, it's not blame. It's what I've been calling the number one cause of disease is ignorance. And people need to be told this, radio stations and programs like this, or books like, not just mine, Senior Fitness is one of a few books. I won't say many, because I don't think there are many books that are telling people don't eat animal products and get out there and run. That's pretty radical for a lot of people. But we're suffering from ignorance and a culture that does not promote health. We are the sickest, us Westerners, are the sickest people on earth.
Now that raises the other issue of that we have so much information available to us now, and yet it is, you're saying it's ignorance, it's what we don't know.
Yeah.
And so tell me some of the web pages that you really like, including your own.
Okay.
And we'll go there, and people can look it up and see how somebody has successfully conquered disease, conquered cancer, and here she is 25 years later, enjoying life, which is the most important thing.
Yeah.
So also people say, well, how can you not enjoy life without the niceties, the desserts and everything like that? So maybe you can...
Oh, desserts can be made. In my cookbook, I talk about... the C in chef is cheap. Cheap, healthy. That's why I forgot it. Money's not... Oh, yes. Anyway, desserts can be very healthy. You can do it with fruits and nuts. Not too many nuts, because they tend to be high fat, but they're healthy. And... You know, just go to my cookbook, or there are lots of other cookbooks and other websites besides my own, which is ruthheidrich.com. There is VegSource, which has probably, let me see, I'm on there as one of the quote-unquote experts, but so is Dr. William Harris, the author of, he's an MD, author of The Scientific Basis of Vegetarianism. John Robbins has a number of books. He's on there. Is Howard Lyman on there? I'm not sure.
Yes, he is. Okay, you so keep good company,
yeah,
Ruth.
You know, is good.
We're going to take this caller here.
Okay.
And we only have about 3.5 minutes left, so let's over to you, caller. You're with Ruth Heydrich.
Hi, I've got a couple of points here. First of all, I wanted to ask you about your exercise routine in the morning that you have. What is it that you do again?
I do a mini triathlon every morning. I do a bike, an hour on the bike, an hour on the run, and some days I cut the run short and do weights like 3 times a week, and I swim 2 or 3 times a week.
Well, I find I love it. I hardly have time for a lot of that stuff. Like I try to go out and do my running, do my laps. I don't use my bike. I guess that's something I should do. And as far as the gym is concerned, I think I'm canceling the membership for that. What is the most important aspect to it, would you say?
I think probably the running is certainly the cheapest. All you need is a good pair of running shoes, and it's the most efficient and effective exercise in terms of time. I'm retired now, and so I have the time. But even when I was working and still doing Ironman training, I would bike to work and swim at the lunch hour and do my, the running, biking, swimming. I squeezed in. Sometimes I ran to work, and it worked. And weekends for long bouts.
Oh, interesting. And another thing I wanted to ask you, though, you're talking about fruits and vegetables and all that. What about the difference between organic and conventional? Because I've noticed that the organic foods have a tendency to taste quite a bit better than than the conventional variety.
Organic whenever possible, to the fullest extent possible, and let's promote organic farming.
Yes. Argument for me there.
Yeah.
I think my biggest problem is, like, my body is very sensitive. It has a very low tolerance for chemicals that producers like to put in our foods.
We're right out of time. Sorry about that. And you've been listening to Dynamic Health. My name's Carl Loskin, and we're sitting in for Croft Woodruff. And thank you, John Pranger, for being in the control room.